Ron woke with a start. "What is it, sweetie?" his chick called from the pillows. Something was wrong. One of his buddies was in trouble. Curse or a blessing, Ron always knew. "Time to rally round the family," he whispered. "Don't wait up." He was out the door and racing down the black streets. His feet would take him faster than any car or cab, and 8 minutes later, Ron hurtled onto the island proper. He sped for the building, took the stairs 6 at a time, and found Fez unconscious on the floor and bleeding. Sneering over him in Daisy Duke diapers was a barefoot 4-year-old girl. The toddler crouched over Fez, about to press a purple crayon into his soft, old diabetic ear. "I wouldn't if I were you, sister," Ron said, stealthily edging toward her. "Watch me, you stupid moo-moo cockerhead." The gloomy, stone-hearted girl reared back, about to nail the crayon into the coffin of Fez's ear, when, boom, Ron introduced Heart of Stone to Hands of Stone. Fez needed the hospital, and quick. His lips were cracked and bleeding. His stent seemed dislodged, and his face was hashed to ribbons with purple crayon violence. There could be no lingering. Ron settled Fez over his shoulders and bounded down the stairs. He headed up over the 59th Street Bridge. Again, Ron knew his feet would be faster than any ambulance. As Ron cut sharply down First Avenue, Fez woke. The city bobbled strangely before him, lights rising and falling in a miserable mirage, his head knocking against something hard. "Is that you, Ron?" Fez finally asked, but Ron did not answer. For just at that moment, a far darker trembling came to his heart. Another disturbance. "What is it, Ron?" Fez asked. "Earl," Ron said. "He's having another MRI at St. Grady's." Ron had already veered off on a new course down 52nd Street. "St. Grady's?" Fez was confused. "I've never heard of that." "Exactly," Ron said. "It's an experimental albino hospital. It's not listed in any directory, but the MRIs there cost 11 cents, and someone handed Earl a pamphlet. Earl doesn't know, but he's about to climb into the melanin removal instrument. These goddamn albinos are gonna turn Black Earl into White Earl." "Oh my lord," cried Fez, feeling guilty, but wondering at the same time if that might not be an interesting bit for the show. "Hold on tight, Fezzy," Ron said. "We're gonna have to kick it up a notch." "Do you mean?" Fez started. "That's right, Fezzy. It's time to rally round the family." Fez took hold of Ron's neck, and in a blink, they shot forward into the night, moving faster than any car. The wind howled in Fez's ears. His eyes began to burn in the screaming air. Could a person run this fast? Light strobed and scratched at Fezzy's eyes, making him feel weak all over. Ron careened down the thin ribbon of sidewalk, kicking out onto the street and then back as obstacles appeared in the distance. He cut swiftly down Lexington and headed directly for a bland structure, remarkable only for its windowless white tile exterior. Without stopping, he blew wide the clandestine St. Grady Hospital doors and headed down the long hall toward the evil MRI room. Ron kicked the door down, breathless and unable to talk. He tugged at Fez. "You will not make this man one shade lighter," Fez scolded. But what Ron and Fez had not counted on was that they'd be met by a team of snowy albinos. Like marshmallows stacked around a campfire they stood, Black Earl's boots hung heavy outside the rocket tube. The wicked medical staff turned to examine the intruders, and in what seemed like slow motion, as the awful machine began to grind, Ron vaulted across the room, took hold of the black boots, and yanked the anesthetized Earl free of the deep pigmentizer just as the first melanin-extracting laser deployed its magnetic beam. With a lassoing flourish, Ron slung Earl up onto the Fez pile on his shoulders and broke for the door. It only took a moment for the pack of brilliant whites to recover from their startling and come storming after them. Down the hall and back out on the thoroughfare, Ron opened his body to the world of speed. "They're on segways," Fez shrieked, observing what looked like a herd of ghostly dentists hovering down the street with gyroscopically adjusted smoothness. Ron struck down the bright, splendid length of Park Avenue. A few blocks up, he could take a left on 34th and get both of his buddies to the NYU Medical Center. But before the plan had fully formed, Ron felt it again. Another deep, tugging disturbance in that place around his heart. Without thinking, he changed course again, careening down 23rd, then cutting back again toward the Lincoln Tunnel. "Now where are we going?" Fez asked. "Jersey," Ron called. "Dave's in trouble. He went to get Roberto back and got caught by a whackbag war council. They've got him in the ring at the Continental Airlines Arena, and they're about to David Blaine his ass."
"Well, what do we do against a whole army of pests?"
Fez asked. Just at that moment, Earl roused. "Well," Earl said, "what can we do against a whole army of pests?" "Ask not," Ron called, "what your buddy can do for you, but what you can do for your buddy." Another lurch forward, another breathtaking accession of speed. Down through the Jersey neighborhoods they hauled, darting in and out of street and lane, over wheelbarrows and fences, leaping and sliding, Ron being pulled by unseen forces toward the mortally imperiled Dave, who was, at that moment, duct-taped to a child's desk in the middle of a wrestling ring, with Roberto crazy glued to his lap, both of them being lowered into a huge, water-filled sphere as hundreds of whackbaggers, in varying degrees of sobriety, cheered. "Do you have any last words?" the ring announcer asked, pressing the arena microphone to Dave's lips. "So the tattoo wasn't enough," Dave said. He was angry more than anything, and if he was going to die, he'd go down strong. He wouldn't give them the satisfaction. "At least I'll die with a friend," Dave said. "Isn't that right, little buddy?" And although he tried with all his might to make one final high-pitched Roberto joke, thinking that a small joke might somehow qualify as a finished bit right here at the last possible moment, his voice choked under as his feet hit the icy water. The crowd stood to the rising thrill. The ring announcer swept the microphone cord dramatically away, and three goons shuffled the PAL-TOC cameras in closer to get a better look at the fishbowl death. No one saw them running down the aisle. Like bulls on parade, Ron hustled their burdensome mass down the narrow strip of gangway toward the ring. He opened his mouth and shouted as loud as he could, "Quit it now!" With a single huge jump, he made it into the ring. "Now what do we have here?" Fez demanded, speaking for them all. The ring announcer stood forward. "Eastside Dave can't finish a bit," he said, "and he needs to pay the ultimate price." "And you're a good judge of that," Fez shot back, always relishing the role of judging the judges. In a second swift action, as Earl untied the cord and Fez closed his eyes, Ron plucked Dave and the desk, puppet and all, out of the David Blaine murder ball and tossed them up onto the huge pile on his shoulders. The crowd went silent, leaning with curious heat and venom forward. They had never seen such a jalopy of flesh and desk and puppet, all telescoping upward into the air, being held aloft by one man. How could anyone attack such a strange, allied contraption? "I think I know when the bit's finished," the master of ceremonies continued. "I've been listening to the radio for years." Agreeing cheers spilled from the crowd, like the wind turned briefly into an animal. Icy and swift, Ron snatched the microphone from the host's hands. "Well, I got my own radio show," Ron said, "and it goes something like this.